Hi, guys. You're listening to the Melrose Place podcast, where we rewatch, recap, and analyze every episode of the hit 90s TV series, Melrose Place.
I'm Dan.
And I'm Jenny.
Let's get started. Three, episode 28, Kiss. Kiss, bang, bang.
Why did you say it like that?
Because it has commas. It's all commas.
Kiss, bang, bang.
It's kiss, comma, kiss, bang, comma, bang.
Okay.
So I said kiss, bang, bang.
I was here. I heard you say it three times. Thank you very much for that reading.
Air date, May 8th, 1995. What a fantastic episode. This was great.
Let's get right into it.
Jess, he heads downstairs from probably some more wall sex with Joe.
He's buttoning up his shirt, so we know they've just come from getting intimate.
That's the only way Jess likes it.
Oh, standing rough on the wall.
Against the wall. Yeah. Something happened to Jess.
And it was vertical. So Jake is coming out of his apartment. He is putting some trash outside, and Jess notices this and says, "What's this? Spring cleaning?"
And then Jake just nonchalantly is like, "I'm moving you out. And you're fired, too."
Yeah, so if you're going to work, forget about it. And now Jess is very taken aback by this. He's like, well, wait a minute, Jake. I mean, if this has something to do with me and Joe, it's like, are you dense?
It's like, this is ridiculous.
Of course it has something to do with you and Joe. What is wrong with you? Not even a few days ago, Jake confided in you by saying, you know, Joe's real special to me. It's not the right time now, but I'm holding out hope that maybe sometime down the line, she and I will reunite. And with maybe hours after he says this to Jess, Jess is trash sexing it up with Joe at the back of Shooters.
I agree. This is a no-brainer. Like, the second that Jess had an inkling that Jake knew, he should have been packing his own stuff.
Yeah.
And just be like, oh, well, Jake knows. Guess I've got to leave, and I probably don't have my job anymore.
But this is like news to Jess, and he's like, oh, little brother, what, you think a woman as hot as Joe wouldn't be into me?
He's like, you don't own her, Jake. You're just jealous, and I hate to rub it in, little brother.
You love that part.
But I'm the best she's ever had.
She just told me. And maybe you just can't handle the fact that Joe is going to be digging her nails into my back.
Ew. First of all, you refer to Jake as little brother all the time. So, like, putting more emphasis on little does not have the same, like, negative connotation that he wants it to have here.
Well, Jess like, really isn't like the smartest, most clever disser, you know?
But it's like I call you Jenny daily. So if I go, Jenny, like,
I don't know.
It's not as heavy.
Well,
it's not as like mean or like a diss. Like, it doesn't just become a diss. You call that man little brother every time you see him. So you can't be like, little brother.
Well, you know, Jake is just kind of like, okay, shut up. Like, I'm done with you. And then Jess keeps going. He, like, will not drop it. And he's like, well, thanks so much for warming her up for me.
That is disgusting.
It really is
that
terrible.
That is a really vile, gross thing to say. Not like, to a friend. to a friend that has had sex with the same person.
This but is your family
brother.
Member.
Brother.
Yeah. So it's at this point that...
Thanks for warming her up.
Jess is standing
there.
She's
not a baseball mitt.
And Jake, like, does this wind up that, like... And this is all goes back to stage combat that I love seeing in, like, these types of situations where you've got, like... The way that it's blocked out, it's like the person that's on the business end of like getting it is basically just standing there waiting to be punched, and you can see it
just over the shoulder.
It's very
wait.
Obvious. So like Jake like winds up, and like Jess has got all the time in the world to like deflect the hit him back, run away, but it just stands there. And then Jake lands that punch right on the kisser. They kind of squabble about. And I will say, Jess is significantly bigger than Jake.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
I mean, Jake, we all know that Grant Cho isn't the biggest guy in the world. Like, yes, he's very fit. And I think, like, proportionally he looks very like jacked, but he's not huge.
He's not tall.
Now Jess, on the other hand, Dan Cortez is a pretty like tall buff guy, and freaking Jake really takes him to task here. He works him.
Or maybe Jess is like regular size and Jake is like shorty, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, Jake is like whooping his ass and down. And he punches him, and then he like throws him on the ground, but then he immediately picks him back up.
It's and, that stage combat blocking.
And then Jenny, weren't it's you like, so pool, bad. Pool, they're
oh,
going in the pool.
No, there was a shot. There was a shot that was coming up. Like it was very artsy, like from the pool. And it was like looking up at them. And I'm like, oh God, please throw one of them in the pool. They're going in that pool. But alas, that didn't occur.
No pool. Joe comes and sees the tail end of the fight, runs downstairs to like protect Jess.
And then he acts like a little bitch, like, oh, Joe, I don't know what happened. He just started hitting me.
And Joe says the worst thing you want to hear when you're getting beat up, which is, stop, you're going to kill him. Like, he's getting his ass handed to him. Please, just leave him alone, you brooding man.
And Jake has to say, we're not brothers anymore.
We're not brothers. We're not friends. We are nothing to each other.
They're done.
And Jess is just left there licking his wounds. And Joe right there with him in a dragon kimono.
Then we have the opening credits.
Open credits. Now the episode starts. We see our good pals, the Trash Friends.
In, oh yeah,
neon yellow and blue.
Yeah,
and they're walking a bike as the trash can like trash truck drives through.
A lot of great establishing shots. We got our mullet pool guy has a pager on his jeans, no less. He's really getting after that pool.
And again, still very disappointed that the actual walkways in Melrose Place don't get as much attention as the skimming of the pool.
Yeah, they do a lot of skimming there.
It is, I mean, I'm going to take a picture and post it because it is, this shot especially, it's filthy. And the walkway up to someone's apartment, it looks like it's sinking. Like it looks like the steps are crooked and broken. Again, Slumlord Amanda has really let things go.
Now, we head over to Matt's apartment. He's getting out of the shower, and we find that he has company. Paul has stayed the night, and he is coming out of the bedroom. Matt offers him coffee, but Paul says, oh, no, I have to run. I have surgery, but I really have to tell you something. So as the audience, we're sitting there being like, oh, is he going to reveal the fact that he's married to a woman?
Mm-hmm.
But no, he says, I had a really great time with you last night.
Had a really great time with you, Matt. Now, I was thinking about it, and Paul's alibi is so risky. Especially, so he had sex with Matt. Then he calls his wife after they're finished, tells her 3-car pileup, I'm going to be here all night and into the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you think that'd be something that you would hear about on the news or the radio?
I think if you're looking for it. And yeah. I think this is a different night, Dan.
This was another night?
Yeah.
Really?
They've been like chilling a lot.
They're just getting it.
I think so.
Okay. Matt is like, oh, why don't you stay? We'll have breakfast. And Paul's like, I got to go to work. And Matt's like, yeah, I got to go to work too. Leaves his pager.
So Paul runs off to work. Matt finds the pager. He runs after Paul. It's too late. He's already gone. So
yeah, is Paul Batman? Because he turned a corner real quick.
He's gone.
That's freaking Batman moves.
Luckily, they work at the same hospital.
Right.
So we go to the next scene, and we're actually at Wilshire Memorial, and Kimberly and Michael are making their way into the new chief of staff's office, Calvin Hobbs.
And is that intentional? As like the cartoon?
Like Calvin and Hobbs?
Yeah.
I don't know. I was thinking that too.
It seems very intentional, but I don't know what the message would be there.
No idea.
But it's a very principal's office moment for both Kimberly and Michael. And basically, Michael has sort of tattled on Kimberly that she is unfit to be a doctor there. And he's shown Calvin Hobbs, her suicide note.
Now, luckily, this chief of staff has a brain in his head, and he's heard a lot of rumors about the Mancinis, and he knows that they are very public, they're fighting all the time, they've both had a lot of problems at the hospital, so he basically calls Michael out, and he's like, why would you call this much attention? This is embarrassing that you're coming in here with these trite little things. And then Michael... Well,
I just wanted to alert the hospital to a dangerous work environment.
Yeah, and it's just basically, it is embarrassing the way that they're parading their dirty laundry all around the staff. Mr. Hobbs says, hey, you know, unless it affects the patients here, I don't want to hear about it. Can you both just play nice, shake hands, be civil when you're here at work, and leave your home life at home? And they both agree to do that. And of course, Michael is disappointed that his little plan to try to get Kimberly out of the hospital has failed.
But I mean, looking at the bigger picture here, she was treated for this suicide at Wilshire Memorial.
Don't you think they would like know?
Yeah,
she took pills.
There should be a little more investigating and sort of probationary period with Kimberly for sure. Especially now that this note is in play, I can't see a resident doctor not stepping in and saying, "Hey, Kimberly, Michael's sort of an asshole." Yes, but. There's some great treatment facilities that Matt here can get you into.
Dan, maybe talk about it. What do you think No More Victims was?
Yeah. How are you on vacation? How did you get to No More Victims?
Dan, because she tried to kill herself and needed to take personal time. And then she went off and got the help she needed from NMV.
Right.
And she's back now.
Right. Okay. Okay. Well... All right. So they will both be suspended if Calvin Hobbs hears anything more about their beef.
Now, we're off with Brooke and Allison, and they're walking through a park, and it's probably like lunch hour, and Brooke has met Allison out. And the major thing that stood out to me were those slits in Brooke's dress.
Yeah. Oh, they stood out to
what
me, too.
What was that?
Brooke has killer legs. My goodness.
Those slits go up to her hips, man.
It was like a warrior's dress.
I couldn't believe that you would like wear that out, let alone wear that to work.
You know her dad probably got it for her.
And some of those choices that she makes. Like that one time you were like, why is Brooke wearing an evening gown to work? It's very true.
She takes fashion risks.
She really does.
I do like that about Brooke. But so, yeah, she's trying to give Allison her job, get her job with an interview with her dad. Allison exclaims that she has no intention of returning to D&D and that she's really set and focused on repairing her ship with Billy.
Yeah, but Brooke's dad has his own company independent of D&D. There is a VP of marketing position available, and she thinks that Allison would be a really good fit. So she convinces Allison to at least take the interview just for experience to see what's up. And, you know, you never know. Maybe she could get hired. Maybe it could lead to something big for her.
I cannot believe Brooke can just look Allison in the eyes time after time and be like, I'm your friend. We're all good here. It's like she should, like, once you're fired, it should have been job done for Brooke.
Right.
I can just sort of sail away.
But Dan, Allison is still in Brooke's little happy picture here.
Yeah.
She's a threat, and Brooke is working on eliminating her threats.
Right. Yeah, Brooke is nasty. She is. She's fierce.
And one thing Allison does say in this scene is, I'm planning on collecting unemployment. That's not how unemployment works, right? You can't get fired and get unemployment.
In the state of California, I think you can.
Really?
I think so. I don't know. It's something about, like, you have to be fired. Yeah, if you're just fired, I think you can collect unemployment.
I thought it was like if you were laid off.
It had to be like by no fault of your own.
Right.
But I don't think that's true. That's why getting fired is like, that's why people don't want to fire, like companies don't want to fire you anymore.
That's wild.
That's what like severance is all about. It's so you don't, like you sign away your like right to like unemployment or like suing or all that shit.
Wow. Okay. So next up, we are at Jane Mancini Designs.
Right, where Sydney, again, I don't know if I like power suit Sydney.
It doesn't suit her.
Oh, yeah, or just all purple power suit.
Maybe it's the Barney hue suit that you're not digging. I agree. Like I think we've talked about this before, but she just works so much better with like kid sister. Yeah. Like this unassuming, kind of naive, almost like childish kind of air.
Yeah. I like her wheeling and dealing. I don't like her, like, I don't like her business aspect.
Yeah.
But I like her, like, sneaking around and, like, you know, pitting people against each other and sort of, like, weaseling into things. But we're there. We're at Mancini Designs. Jane is like, where are the drugs, Sydney? I want to know what you did with them. And Sydney's like, look, dude, it's all good. I flushed the drugs. And now Jane wants to, she's like, all right, well, you got to nullify this entire deal.
I've left messages. I'm just waiting for them to call back. Okay.
Now the best line of the entire episode is, listen, you little idiot, you're going to get us out of this, even if it kills you. Listen, you little idiot. And then this whole like argument is interrupted by that slime ball from last week calling Mancini Designs to talk to Sydney.
How convenient.
Yeah, and Sydney like blasts him about the heroin. She's like, yeah, I didn't know there'd be heroin in the pantyhose. And he says, you know, hey, forget the heroin, but I really think we connected at that dinner where I was asking you all these weird questions.
Yeah, so we learned his name is Jim, and he says, if you just let me explain, meet me for dinner tonight, I'll tell you everything. And she tries to be like, what, you don't want to talk dirty over the phone? You don't want to have any incriminating evidence against you? And he just says, meet me for dinner, it'll all make sense.
And I'll explain everything. So Sydney's like, okay, great. then tells Jane, like, Jane, look, back off. We're going to have dinner. Smooth this whole thing over. We won't have anything to deal with the heroin. And that's where we leave them. Head on over to the hospital. Matt's asking if Dr. Graham is around. And his secretary, I guess this is, right?
Yeah, so Matt goes up to Paul, Dr. Graham, his office, and he has his beeper, and he's returning it. He asks for Paul, learns that Paul is in surgery, and as he's in the office, he notices there are multiple framed photos of Paul with a woman. Now, this is not computing for Matt, and he asks the secretary, oh, is that woman in the photos Dr. Graham's sister?
This is not how you pose in pictures with your sister.
No. And I love this because the secretary is like, oh, it is his. No, it's not his sister. It's his wife, of course.
And then Matt's heart, little heart, sinks into his chest.
And then, of course, the secretary goes on to say, they have it all, don't they? Looks, love, money. It makes me kind of jealous of him, but it's just kind of like, oh,
she got a tattoo
really?
Of him on his back, on her back. I carve his name into my left breast every night. Come take a look.
So as
there's a story there.
Matt is very upset. You can visibly see he leaves the pager with the secretary and goes about his merry way.
And we get another clue as to Matt's work environment. He tells her that he works downstairs in social services. That's what Matt does. So why is he setting up programming for the entire fucking hospital? Why does he have to be there all night? Why is he also checking in on, like, comatose Amanda's cancer that one night where he's like, don't worry, I'll watch her. Matt, you're in social service.
Well, he's a friend of Amanda's.
I guess so. We leave them. Matt is being used.
Yeah, so next up, we're back at Shooters, and Joe goes to visit Jake, who's working the bar, and she insists we have to talk.
And Jake is like, fuck off.
You know, that would just make me really mad if I was working a shift somewhere, and then one of my friends came in and demanded that we need to talk about something personal.
Well, when he sets the bar of barging in her apartment last week.
Hey, that is a good point.
And he's like, hey, sit down. And then she's like, I have to go to work. And he's like, I don't give a crap.
A little taste of your own medicine, Jake.
Yeah, but he is like, look, Joe, if anyone has a right to be pissed here, it's me.
And Joe is trying to play it off like, look, we weren't married, okay? We weren't even dating. It's not like I'm having an affair. You just don't like who I'm dating now. And he's like,
dude.
No, it's not just that. I know Jess, and it's about disrespecting me.
If this was me, I would look her in the eye and be like, listen here, bitch. You and I had sex the day we met. You met Jess. All right? That night. Remember? I was perched on the bed. flung the beer.
Threw the beer at the wall.
And then slid down the bed. And then we did it. Like, you realize this, right? And then she would have to say, yes, of course. Like, okay, then that's it. We had sex the day you met Jess. And now this, I'm done.
Yeah, I think it's completely disrespectful. And it's so amazing to me how both Jess and Joe were like, what's the problem?
You're really like,
they're so cavalier about it. Yeah. And it's just ridiculous to me.
And if you didn't know it was wrong, if you weren't doing anything wrong, why did you keep it a secret?
No, that's true.
You know, this is insane. So Joe says, yeah, Joe's like, we're just friends. And Jake ends up saying, like, look, I don't want shit to do with you or him while you all are together. Want nothing. Fair enough. J- Jake stands his ground.
Yep. So we are now with Sydney and Jim, and it's that evening. They're at dinner, and Sydney wants Jim to cut to the chase. What's going on? Why do we have to meet in person? And that's when Jim produces a badge.
FBI.
We knew it. I was undercover.
Yeah, I had my suspicions. And you even said it on the last one. You're like, I swear, I thought he was going to be like, I'm a cop and you're under arrest. You're right.
But guess what? She's not under arrest.
Right.
He actually wants to spare Sydney of any kind of fallout that this whole heroin pantyhose deal is going to produce for Jane Mancini Designs.
Dude says, Mancini Designs is going down and you're going to need to resign. Here's what you need to do. Post-date your resignation and hand it in. And she's like... what about Jane? And he says, I can only save one of you.
Okay, this whole plan is so, there's so many holes in it. It's so insane. How does she just writing a resignation letter and backdating it to a week? How that is not official in any way. And then may she I remind
probably
you
signed contracts.
I was gonna say, like, if she backdates it to a week, it's probably before she was even made president of Jane Mancini Designs, because
it's been about
she's only
day.
Been president for like a week.
Maybe 36 hours.
It's like so ridiculous. And even if that's the case, it's like there's probably mountains of evidence showing that if she is in fact the president, that like she was.
So let's go over to D&D. Strange visitor at D&D. It's Kimberly. She shows up to Amanda's office and she kind of glides in there, and Kimberly wants to officially apologize and say that, you know, she blamed Amanda for her failed marriage and that she shouldn't have done that.
And she also says that Amanda didn't survive cancer because of Michael. She survived in spite of him. She believes that the first treatment she received from Michael was a botched job, which actually made her sicker. And Kimberly thinks that she has grounds to file a lawsuit against Michael Mancini.
And at first, Amanda's like, I don't want to do that. I'm not one for lengthy litigation. Yeah, you are. You love that shit. You absolutely are into that. Right? Like she wanted to prolong and fight to the end at D&D when she was being charged with like sexual harassment towards Chaz.
Well, I think because she had no choice, the suit was filed against her and D&D.
Right.
So of course she wanted to fight to make sure her reputation wasn't torn to tatters.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that she may have learned from that and she doesn't want to go into it again. But she does tell Kimberly that she'll think about it.
Yeah. She gives her, Kimberly gives her card. And she says she's available day or night.
Next
preferably up, night in the dark.
We're now whisked away to Wilshire Memorial Hospital, where Paul has been looking everywhere for Matt, left him many messages, and meets Matt in the ever elusive and somewhat mysterious filing cabinet room. We've seen this
where
room
where shit goes down
a couple times before. A lot of heated arguments and confrontations happen in this room.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of filing cabinets. That's all. This room is just filled with filing cabinets.
And whenever they do file cabinets, people just like get files and put them in a different cabinet. They're just constantly switch swapping. But
yeah.
Paul is hitting on Matt hard, and Matt is just cold shoulder, pissed off. And Paul's like, you know, my secretary thinks you're cute.
And I love this. Matt says, oh, well, I wonder how your wife would feel about that.
You lied to me, Paul, and it's unfair.
And then, of course, Paul's like, look, Matt, I was going to tell you. And Matt's like, yeah, when? On our first anniversary?
Paul says Matt is the only guy he's ever been with. And he just doesn't know how to handle this.
I'm just so confused and I'm so scared. I really need a friend right now.
Now, the next part shows Matt's growth throughout the three seasons that we're near completing. Matt would normally be like, oh, sweetie, let's have lunch and we'll talk all about being gay and how to like fix you. But now he's like, buy a book, figure it out. I got no time for this.
Yeah, and he basically says, as long as your marital status is what it is now, we're not going to talk.
And he's like, we're just friends.
Yeah, good for you, Matt.
Yeah, stand your ground, Matt. Don't let people be using you. Back to Mancini Designs. Sydney lies and says that they're completely out to Jane.
Right, so the pantyhose... bad guys, heroin slingers.
It's all done.
They're done. Sydney was able to sweet talk him out of it. They want to change businesses anyway. No hard feelings. And Jane is like, wait a minute. This isn't adding up to me. Like, so they're not afraid that we're not going to turn them into the cops. And she's like, nope. They feel like we have more stuff on them. And then Jane says, okay, and she's still not buying it. And that's when Sydney hands her the resignation letter. Jane immediately sees that it's backdated a week. And she's like, Sydney, why are you giving this to me? And why is this a week? Why is this dated before you became the president?
And Sydney's like, look, we both know I'm not cut out for this. All of these suits are terrible that I'm buying.
I mean, I literally look like Barney right now.
It's just like, let's pretend that I just wasn't president. And Jane is still just like, this seems uber fishy.
But okay.
And like, dude, this is so telling of Sydney. Like, she is just out. She doesn't care that Michael's on the payroll again. Like, this is just, her shit is going down.
She's got a, it's self-preservation, baby.
She is abandoned ship and just cool with her sister going down for the H. Now, Allison is chilling with Brooke's dad. I didn't realize that this was a boat until you said something.
Yeah, they're on a yacht right now.
Who interviews on a yacht?
So, they're conducting this interview on a yacht. And, of course, Brooke's dad is very sophisticated, and he is sitting in this beautiful, like, I don't know, like, living room in the yacht. Allison is drinking tea.
Yeah, he seems like he's watched, like, a ton of daughter sex from afar.
So, Brooke's dad is like, well, Brooke tells me that you have a great work ethic and a lot of experience. And quite frankly, we're looking to fill this position immediately. It pays $100,000 a year. And you do get all of the perks. You get an expense account and this and that and blah, blah, blah. And basically the sweetest deal you've ever heard.
But guys, keep in mind, if someone ever says, if I asked you, if I offered you this job, would you take it? You should always be like, that's a red flag of like, this is gonna suck.
Well, I'm just kind of like, I have a lot of questions about what kind of work does Brooke's dad do?
Sounds like crime.
We only hear it's in the metals division.
I am directly under Palmer Woodward.
Of like, the metals division.
Yeah, this is not good.
You would be VP of marketing.
Of metal.
And I'm just kind of like, okay, well, she's coming from an ad agency. Like, does she have any idea what area this is? Like, what?
Yeah, all she has to do is do a couple pitches, stand up out of her chair, and be like, now let's talk. You're walking on a metal beam, okay? And you're like, I want to build a house. Then she does a little turn.
Because she does, you have to choreograph pacing back and forth.
Right.
And doing like, and if she has a partner that can pace like counteractive with what she's doing.
Yeah.
That's even more impactful.
Oh, yeah. Then she's like, Your metal workers take a break. One is eating a sandwich, but there's one. There's one guy who's like, sorry, guys, I'm not going to work because I love metal. And that is what your company does with metal. They don't take breaks. Ding. Done.
Wow. Allison, you really delivered.
Just a mastermind of metal work.
So we just see this little tidbit, and apparently Brooke's dad is very impressed. He says, you're everything my daughter said you were and more. So it appears it went well. She leaves the yacht and said, and
but not before he's like, someone else took this job, but they backed out. See you later.
We need to fill it immediately. I still need to see a couple people, but if we're going to hire you, we're going to let you know real soon.
And we need an answer the second we tell you we're going to hire you. Do and not she's think. Like,
okay. Bye.
Like, all right. That sounds normal. See ya. Thanks for the tea on the boat. So now Sydney and now undercover cop guy. What's his name? Undercover FBI.
Jim.
Undercover FBI slime ball Jim.
Yeah.
That's his new name. Undercover
FBI slime ball Jim.
FBI slime ball Jim. They are on the phone. They're on a pay phone. And he's telling her, look, while we do this sting to arrest your sister for probably life, go underground for a week or two. I need you to head out to Palm Springs. I need you to go to this sandwich place and order a pastrami on rye. I cannot be more specific.
Now just tell that to the clerk. The clerk will then give you instructions to meet me at a motel. You go to the motel, I'll be there, and we'll take it from there.
Right.
Now, have you noticed anytime Jim, FBI undercover agent Slimeball Jim, calls, he's always like reclined on a couch. Like he's just...
He's very relaxed.
Yes. It's like... It's like almost like he's ordering a pizza or like listening to movie showtimes. It just seems like
it's very chill,
too nonchalant.
It's almost like he's making this shit up.
Almost.
So now we go to a pool hall where Jess is sort of just hanging out by himself, hanging out by himself.
Playing pool by himself? Yeah. Is that what he was doing here?
Then a weird 80s band walks by talking about like the best way to rob places. So this triggers Jess to be like, oh, sweet. These are guys I can talk to about robbing things.
Awesome. But how do I get in their good graces?
But even
how do I make them like me? How do I get into their little gang?
But even their like banter back and forth is like, no. You need to shoot everyone in the building to rob it.
Oh, you think robbing a store is cool? You should rob a bank and then murder everybody. And Jess is like, how do I get in with these guys? Oh, I have an idea. How about I insult them and get my ass kicked?
Yeah, let me just that'll be a good intro. So Jess just starts talking shit really loud near them, and they're like, "What the fuck did you just say?" It's like, "You got loud mouths with bad manners."
I thought you guys were at a sewing circle, not a bar, and that really gets them mad.
Oh yeah.
Now the main dude gets all up in Jess's face. And this guy, he's freaking Richard Ramirez, the Night Stalker. I looked at this guy and
you
I was like,
me a picture.
Holy shit, this is the Night Stalker.
He's a dead ringer.
Was Richard Ramirez out of prison during the filming of this? Because holy crap, it's him.
He's perfectly cast. But he breaks a pool cue and then puts the half that's broken up against Jess's neck And he's like, I've killed people for less.
And then Jess just like, as blood is like trickling out of his nose, he's like, great, we need to talk. I've got a great opportunity for you.
Yeah. Doesn't he say something like clever, like, you're not getting paid enough if you're doing it for free.
Yeah, something dumb like that.
But, and he's got a job for the guy currently whooping his ass. How does Jess explain, like, getting his ass kicked again to anyone?
And, you know, the thing that I find kind of silly.
His nose is broken.
Well, Dan, like, he repeatedly gets his ass kicked, but there's never any physical indication that anything happened to him.
Yeah, remember, like, Matt would get, like, pushed and have bruises all over him.
Joe literally said, you're going to kill him, Jake, stop. Yet there's not a mark on Jess. And then in future scenes, nothing's wrong with Jess later on after this little gang beats his ass.
He should have marks.
I agree.
They used to be really good with marks. Like, even if Allison worked on a car, she'd get a smudge across her face to prove it. And, like, remember who had the lip that was disgusting? Was that Matt or Michael? Like, their lip was, like, purple.
I think it was Matt after he got...
When he got jumped?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. But then Michael had... half of Michael's face was paralyzed after the accident.
He's like, please. Yeah, I hate you, Matt. Hey, get out of here.
He was so angry. But so, yeah, they've really toned it down on the makeup for everyone.
I agree. Okay, so now we head over to Allison's apartment, and she gets a phone call.
She's got the job, y'all.
Yeah, so Billy Armstrong calls and says, how about coming to work for me? I need you to start immediately. So Allison is like, awesome, I love that. And then Billy says, well, we'll just get you on the next flight to Hong Kong.
Excuse me?
Oh, I didn't tell you the job's in Hong Kong? This is the second time this has happened in Melrose Place. One time I'll let it slide when Billy goes to work at the Escapade Division in New York. But, oh, didn't we tell you it's in New York?
No, it's in Hong Kong. Make it snappy.
Yeah.
Pack everything you own.
And I just kind of want to be like, okay, even if Billy didn't disclose to you that the job is in Hong Kong, like, Allison, you went to an interview on a yacht. Where did you think you were going to be reporting to work?
Yeah.
Like, what, did you have any background on the company itself? You didn't ask, like, where are your offices? Where would I work?
And she's really jonesing for Billy. I picked up on it because she's making a peanut butter sandwich.
Oh.
As she takes the call. That's
a really good observation.
She's really missing him. And she's all up in that peanut butter.
All she needs is a Donald Duck orange juice.
And a sweaty belly button. But she's wearing, this is the call the same day to tell her she has the job because she's in the same power suit.
Yeah, that's it, guys. So she's like, so she's very surprised that the job is in Hong Kong.
Gee, it's 100 G's though. With 40% bonuses.
And that's what, 95? What year are we in now?
95.
Yeah, 95. So that's a lot.
100 grand. Plus 40% bonuses if you're on your medal game.
Well, money ain't everything, Dan. So Billy says, you know what? Why don't you sleep?
Sorry.
Why don't you sleep on it? Get back to me in the morning about if you want to take the job or not. If not, we're going to offer it to the next person.
That's incredible. If you were offered 100 grand a year plus 40% bonuses, but you had to go to Hong Kong. Realistically, how much time would you need to make that decision?
Would I have to leave you?
No.
If we were
moving... just period. Like, you'd have to talk to me, right, about leaving. Factor that all in. That's all
probably
up to you.
Probably, like, 1 to 2 weeks.
Yeah, I'd say 1 week minimum.
To really think about it, go over all the pros and cons, think about it logistically, consult those people. Because you're moving out of the country. If you're a single person and you're not tied down to like a partner, like a spouse or a child, then I imagine it's a lot easier to make that decision. But yeah, when you have more people in your life that would be impacted by it, then I think that you'd need more time. As a single woman, if I didn't have a family or like a boyfriend and I just kind of like was out on my own and just trying to build my career and they said a year, I'd say I could make that decision in 3 to 5 days for sure.
Mm-hmm. And all she has is the car and the apartment.
Yeah.
She just has to break that lease. I'm sure Amanda's going to murder her on early exit of that lease. But they get off the phone, Allison and Billy Armstrong. His name's Billy.
Mm-hmm.
And the camera pans away and Brooke is right there orchestrating the whole goddamn thing.
Yeah. She was listening to their conversation. And I love this because that's when the dad says, well, what do you think? Is Hong Kong far enough away from here?
Oh, it's perfect, Daddy.
So the crazy thing here is that it seems like this is a legit job. He is actually employing her.
He's going to pay Brooke's nemesis $100,000 a year. Just so like she's away from
Brooke's
Billy.
Undercover nemesis that she doesn't even know she's competing for the same person.
Yeah, can Brooke come here and like try to mess with my with my location?
Your work life?
Yeah, as long as it involves 100 G's, I'm okay with that. I'll work for Mr. Armstrong. So let's go to D&D.
It's the next day.
Next day. Brooke and Billy are talking about Allison taking the job. And Billy doesn't think she should go due to like everything that's happened. And Brooke immediately is like, listen, however you'd like. She sounds like a robot. She's like, however you would be interested in influencing Allison would be great. But I think you should take your own personal feelings out of it.
Well, you know, you've got to look at it from her perspective because ultimately she wants Amanda's position and she wants Billy to be her guy. And she's got to get Allison out of the way first. So
all she's got to do is wear those skirts around Billy. You don't need to send Allison away.
Well, she's thinking that if Billy's on board and if Billy does kind of push her, nudge Allison to the Hong Kong job, that she'd be more apt to take it because Billy is her most trusted confidant. It's not like she's got like a ton of friends in LA that are her support system.
Right.
And it is time, like she should go. She should.
Yeah. She should go.
But Billy says, you know what? I think it would be a mistake if she went.
Brooke is like, look, she will be like the biggest leader in the Pacific Rim. Like
who
says Pacific Rim after that? I mean, I know the movie
didn't
later.
Come out yet,
right? But who refers to it as like the Pacific Rim, like the world?
I don't know.
Is anyone like, I'm the largest celebrity in the Pacific Rim?
Well, maybe. I mean, I don't work in like China and like I don't work in the Pacific Rim, so I can't speak on it.
But she's just like, look, this is a once-in-a-lifetime chance. Allison can have the opportunity of a lifetime.
Right.
Now, Palm Springs time. And we actually, this might be, you mentioned this, our first ever like title card that describes like the setting.
Yeah, I don't think we've ever seen this before where it's like Palm Springs, California.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
They've never. Where do they go? They've been to like Santa Barbara.
They've been to Palm Springs before.
Seattle.
Ellensburg. Right. I wish we had a title card for that because I was like, where the hell are they?
That's right.
I have no idea. It's only at like in episodes since that they refer to Ellensburg that I'm like, oh, okay, I know what that is now.
And then Wisconsin, which is really Burbank.
We've so never.
Home in Burbank, and they're like, all right, we got to be in Wisconsin, so just fuck, throw everyone in sweaters.
And this one too, I doubt they're in Palm Springs. They just have a movable like billboard truck that just says desert in the back. Like,
how do we convey that this is Palm Springs? I don't know, Jim.
This is just, Santa Clarita.
Just write it on the screen. Brilliant. We will do that. Make sure there's a palm tree in the fucking
now
establishing shop.
Sydney is at that little fast food joint that Jim told her that she needs to go to and order the pastrami on rye.
And it's all tacos.
It's all tacos. So that's the first thing that we noticed. The menu is very clearly positioned where you can read what they're serving. And it's all tacos, enchiladas.
I've got a real problem with this entire situation because Sydney goes up to the counter and is not covert at all. And she's like, dude opens up the window. He's like, hi, can I help you? And she just is like, I need a pastrami on rye. And like, all she.
And like winking and like looking at him, like, uh huh, uh huh.
And he's like, what the hell are you talking about? We sell tacos.
And she's like, okay, no, I don't think you heard me. You didn't hear me right. I need a pastrami on rye.
And the guy's like, you are challenged.
Because honestly, I got tacos. I got enchiladas. That's what I got here. We don't have pastrami. Okay. Does somebody else work here? Do you have a manager? Do you have like another shift? Well, my brother comes in at 6. Well, fine. I'll just, you sure you don't know what pastrami on rye means? He's like, no, I don't know what you're talking about. So then
she just sits there.
Sydney just sits there right outside of the fast food joint.
We leave him. We go to Paul, who's harassing Matt. He's just harassing
him. Yeah, he's like, talk to me. Why won't you talk to me? Why won't you be a part of my life?
I need your help. Give me the benefit of your counsel.
Now, Matt is like, I can't be part of this, Paul. You need to get into group therapy. That's what you need to do.
Just come to my house. Let me make you dinner. We can have a private talk, and I just want to talk.
Nothing more. Carol, my wife, is out of town. I mean, I really just want this chance to be alone with you. I've never gone through this before. I really need a friend, and I thought you were my friend. Aren't you, Matt? So Matt, like, takes the bait, and he's like, okay.
Yeah, I'll go to your house and talk.
Oh, all right.
That you've made it obviously clear that your wife's not there, so you can bone me.
Yeah.
Now, we go to D&D, and Amanda went ahead and filed the malpractice suit. That was so quick.
So quick. And she's there. Brooke's in her office. Michael storms in just berating and yelling, calling her a bitch and saying, I can't believe it. You filed a suit against me, you stupid bitch.
All Michael does is violate that restraining order.
And furthermore, like, let's talk about the front desk people at D&D again.
They're using the same security as Wilshire Memorial.
It's just like, guys, how many times have people stormed into this office when they shouldn't even be in the building?
There should be one rule. If anyone comes in storming and says, where's Amanda?
You stop.
Don't let
you
that stop person
them.
Through.
Don't let them through. You got to get them in the intercom and say, this person's here to see you. That never happens.
No. And it needs to.
Now, Brooke picks up the phone and she's like, I'm going to call the police. And as Amanda and Michael are arguing, she's like, hello, police.
Hello, police. I hate that shit. My mom does that shit. She'll call my phone, my cell phone, and then be like confused and be like, hello, Daniel? Like, of course. Yes, you have phoned me. If you dial 911 10 times out of 10, you're going to get the police.
Yeah.
You don't need to double check that the police are on the other line. Hello, police.
Now, what's funny to me is that, like, Michael leaves and Amanda's like, hang up the phone. And I'm like, Amanda, why? If you're trying to ruin Michael, if you're filing this malpractice suit against him, he violated the restraining order. You have proof of that. You have a witness of that. You could call right now and get a written record of that. And it's silly that she doesn't actually file the complaint.
Yeah, that's stupid.
Okay.
If you want him away, that's the way to do it quickly. So Allison and Billy go to dinner. And this dinner is for Allison to sort of like, I guess, see Billy's reaction to all this and see if there's something still there. And this is where we learn that the job's a 1-year minimum. And she's like, okay, so Billy, what do you think about it? And Billy's just real cold. And he's like, there are no cons.
I think you should consider it seriously.
It's only a year and a lifetime opportunity.
And of course, like, Allison is like, well, Billy, there are a couple of cons. Like, number one, I don't speak Chinese. It's like, well, that is a concern. But just as you said, Billy is very cold. He's very like, you should go.
Why don't you just go right now? I'll pack your bags.
And you can tell Allison just feels a little dejected by all of this. I think she was anticipating Billy to being like, no, you can't leave because Allison, I love you. I want to make it work. But in fact, it's not the happening. Complete opposite.
You're a total bitch. I never heard Billy washing your back. It's done. It is done. But Allison asks him, gosh, what happened to us to even think about moving 10,000 miles? And Billy immediately is like, a lot has happened.
Yeah.
You're a really raging bitch at work. I don't like you. And the last time we made out, there was Chinese food in your mouth.
Ew.
Which I did not appreciate.
So maybe you can go back to China and have that experience.
Oh, yeah.
More.
They love Chinese. That's a pro.
That's a pro.
So... yeah, she doesn't get what she wants out of Billy. This is probably going to seal the deal that she's going. Now, Matt and Paul are making dinner. Paul has issues. Paul is really starting to remind me of a guy that goes by the name of Terry Oaks. He's so aggressive.
Really?
He's very Terry.
You think he's one of the Oaks twins?
He's maybe they're triplets.
Maybe he's the brother.
Yeah, and
maybe
he's pissed because he's not part of Twin
he's
Oaks.
He's the other Twin Oaks, and he just changed his name.
No, it was Triplet Oaks. There was a fallout, and Terry and Jerry were like, fuck Paul. This is Twin Oaks.
Or maybe, Dan, he was Jerry Oaks, and then he changed his name.
Ooh, there's a story. There's a spinoff right there. There's him, Kay Beacon, and...
please throw Keith in there.
Keith. Yeah, they all have their own.
And then the other Paul.
That's a whole different
they're
Melrose
in a separate
place.
Melrose universe.
Skid Row.
Okay, so...
Isn't he like Terry, though?
Yeah, I mean, I get that. He's very forward. He's physical.
Skittish.
He is physically imposing because he's larger. So...
And needy.
We're learning a little bit about Paul's background. Carol put him through medical school. And I guess she comes from a very affluent family. Paul was kind of from the wrong sides of the tracks. Her family tolerates him, but they don't really have the greatest relationship. And how he describes the relationship he has with Carol, he says it's more like their brother and sister, and it's been like that for the past 14 years.
Not according to the photos on your desk, homie. That don't look like brother and sister. But he said to Matt, meeting you was like waking up from a 15-year sleep.
Yeah.
And he's ready to go.
Yeah, and he says, you know, I think we should go upstairs and talk. And at first, Matt is like, upstairs? I don't think we should do that. And he's like, oh, I do. And Matt's like, okay.
That's the Oaks in him. That's so fucking aggressive.
That's all Paul Oaks.
He's going to make him wash dishes. And then like,
throw, I cooked for you. You have to clean.
Throw water in his face. God damn it. Where have you been? Do you work here? Jesus Christ.
Okay, so we cut back over to Sydney, who is now just sleeping among the trash of tacos that she's eaten throughout the day.
How did she sleep there?
She had nowhere else to go, Dan.
And she, so let's say she got there at 1. Maybe noon.
They're okay. Closing.
Right, they are closing, which means that she slept from noon to past 6.
Well, I don't know if she
because now they're closing.
Dan, she wasn't sleeping the whole time because she had to eat a lot of those wrappers and whatever was in those wrappers. But the point is, she's been there all day. The guy calls out from the stand and he's like, lady, you got to leave. We're closing and we have a strict no loitering policy. And she's like, wait, is there a third shift coming on? You got to give me a pastrami and rye. And he's
like, we're closed. You're weird. Bye.
I told you for the millionth time, we don't have pastrami and rye.
They like have this sliding of the window game where she's like, come on. You have pastrami and rye. And he's like, no, we don't. Slide it shut. She slides it open. What do you mean you don't have it? I mean, we're closed, bitch. This is over. Slide it shut.
So it turns out Sydney has nowhere to go for the night.
Mm. Now Jess is back at the pool hall.
Which we learn is called Sideshow.
Yeah, he's at Sideshow coaching the riffraff.
And freaking Richard Ramirez, the Night Stalker, is there. And they're brokering a deal.
Jess has saved up everything he's earned at Shooters to fuck Shooters. He slips them an envelope full of money, we can assume. And then Richard Ramirez is like, hey, what's your beef with this guy anyway?
Oh, this guy has had it coming for a long time. By the way, you get the other half upon completion of the job.
Now, we as audience members have no idea
what the job is,
where it is, and who it's affecting, but we can assume
has something to do with Jake.
It's definitely something to do with Jake.
So yeah. Little brother's going to get it.
Little brother. D&D time. Billy's talking to Allison about getting a ride to the airport.
Now, Allison is leaving that day to fly to Hong Kong. But she doesn't have a ride. Joe only has a motorcycle. And I'm like, don't you have any cabs? Or like, you're getting this high power job. You can't get a cab to the airport.
And this is continuity error because Joe definitely has a car because that's what they drove up to meet Jess in.
But
that's
was
Joe's
that,
car.
Are you sure that wasn't Jake's?
Jake doesn't have a car.
I don't know, Dan.
Jake's got the bike.
You're saying Joe has a bike. Maybe Joe's car is in the shop.
Jake always drives friends' cars. He drove Jane's and he drove Joe's. But I'm pretty sure she has a car. How does she lug around all that camera gear?
But, I don't know.
Yeah.
So long story short, Allison needs a ride to LAX, so she's hitting up Billy to leave work and go. At that very moment, Amanda comes over to Billy, realizes that he's on the phone, and overhears that he's planning on taking Allison to the airport. Mm-mm. And she jumps in and she's like, I hope you're not planning to leave the office now. We have a meeting in an hour and you're expected to be there, Billy.
And Billy's like, oh, sorry, Allison. My mother says that I can't. I can't give you a ride to the airport.
But I just think I'm kind of on Amanda's side here. Like, you can't just freaking leave to take a friend to the airport.
Sorry, guys. I gotta work.
when you have like an actual job with real responsibilities and like a meeting that we're counting on you to be there.
Excuse me, boss. Yeah. Can I take my friend to the airport?
Like, what?
On no notice.
Yeah.
No. And so Brooke is like, I'll take her. Why does Brooke? And then why does, dude, Allison has lived at Melrose Place for a very long time. Jane could take her. Matt could take her.
Dan, it's during the work day.
Jake could take her. Jake don't, I mean.
Jake works a lot. Okay. Yeah, he's at Shooters a lot. So anyway, she hangs up with Billy. Brooke has volunteered to take her to the airport.
No phone call to sister.
Oh no, she never consulted. She didn't consult Meredith about going.
Yeah, last time we saw Meredith, she was naked in bed trying to bang Billy.
Oh, God, remember that?
Allison told me to be more adventurous. So here I am when I have sex.
Okay. Where's Meredith?
Well, she's in San Francisco, Dan.
Do you like my dress, Billy? Is it sexy? You want to dance?
Okay.
Meredith's in the spinoff too, y'all. Yeah. She's a main character.
Oh, Jenny, are you okay? Do you like my dress? Do you want to have sex?
Okay, so then when Allison gets off the phone with Billy and they've already made the arrangements that Brooke is going to drive her, she tells Joe that she still has feelings for Billy. She doesn't know how to communicate them. Joe suggests writing her a letter.
Write Billy a letter.
Why don't you write him a letter? Letters are great.
Cool, Joe. How many letters have you written?
Okay, next up, we are at Wilshire Memorial, where Matt's at work, and he gets a visitor, a woman in an all-white striking pantsuit.
All-white power suit.
I just want to be like, where can I get that suit? Because that is effing gorgeous.
She is not happy with Matt.
Yet she screams elegance and just that classic beauty.
She storms into Matt's office. You targeted him, didn't you? That's what your kind does. Like, just spouting all
at first she says,
homophobic
are
bullshit.
You Matt Fielding? And he says, yeah. How dare you, you disgusting piece of trash. I came home and found my husband in tears. He said that you took advantage of him, that you seduced him. How could you?
This is such bullshit. I'm like, yeah, I tricked your husband into having like sex with me. Get the fuck out of my office, please.
Yeah, and again, where's the security?
Security.
She was storming. If someone's storming, you get them out.
Both of these places of business need a very like tough training session on who they let through the door.
Now, Carol says, if I find out you go anywhere near my husband again, I will kill you.
That's a lot.
That's like next level shit. You're going to kill him?
That's assault. Her name's Carol, right?
Yeah.
She's played by, I like her name, Dana Sparks.
Ooh.
She has been on JAG and Star Trek The Next Generation and Melrose Place and Matlock. Yeah. Good for you. Good for you, Sparks.
Okay, now we're with Brooke and her hot little convertible with Allison. They're pulled up to the curb at LAX, and they're really filming at LAX. There are many times before that they try to pawn off other locations as the airport, but we can see that little space restaurant in the middle there that LAX is very known for.
Yep, definitely LAX. Brooke's in another white power suit.
Now, Allison hands Brooke a letter and asks her to give it to Billy. Brooke asks, do you still have feelings for him? And Allison says, yes, I'm still in love with him. and I always have been. I just don't know what to do about it, and I have everything written in that letter. Now, Brooke tells Allison that doors are going to open for her that she can't even conceive of, and if she and Billy are meant to be together, he'll still be here when she gets back. And of course, Allison is like, thanks, Brooke. You always know what to say. Thanks for all your support. And she's like, break a leg, Allison.
Break a leg. But you know what? Look, who cares? You're making $100,000 a year now. Have fun. Have fun in Hong Kong.
Yeah. Have a great time. Now, as soon as Allison walks out of the frame, Brooke takes the letter, crumples it up, and says, I don't think so, and just throws it into her car.
And, yeah, Allison has, like, one bag.
No, I think there are several bags, but they were taking them out of the car. Like, the bellmen of the airport were, like, taking them out of the car, and I think Brooke even handed them a tip.
Okay. But, yeah, she's off. That's exciting.
Off to Hong Kong. Excited.
Head on over to Mancini Designs.
Now, at first I was thinking, is this a dream? Because Sydney's there. She's knocking on the door. Jane opens the door, and we see a lot of people in the background kind of scurrying about.
A lot of photography.
Lots of, like, flash bulbs. And Jane says, oh, what are you doing here? Come to see me arrested. So we are led to believe that this is a raid. They have a search warrant. The FBI is going through everything in Jane Mancini Designs. And she's about to get arrested for all this heroin smuggling.
Right. And Jane starts talking shit. Sydney's like, it's done. And it's revealed.
Okay. So this was the best part of the episode.
So good.
I did not see this coming at all. Apparently, the two sleazy guys including Jim, the FBI undercover dude, they're not sleazy guys at all. They're not FBI at all. They are two models that Jane hired to fake this whole deal in order to trick Sydney to give up the presidency of Mancini Designs.
What a twist. This was like a Saw moment.
It really was. You recognize these two guys? Yeah. They were models in the fall line last season.
So amazing.
And I'm like, in what world are those two guys models?
And the creepy guy who went to dinner with Sydney was like, how was your pastrami on rye?
And really
cracking up.
That was a great job.
It's amazing. And then Sydney is so pissed. She's like, how'd you do it, Jane? You guys suck. You're all freaks.
All freaks. But I love what Jane said. She's like, Sydney, with the number of people you've burned, I could have sold tickets to this. Which is so true. And they all just make fun of her. And it's like, good for you, Jane. And she's done this before. We were talking about this after the episode, that way back when she was like, she had the blood test results for Michael's
DUI.
Yeah, she was gonna.
She used that to keep Sydney and Michael married to each other. And she was like, "You guys have to. You guys are perfect for each other. Y'all need to stay married to each other." And then they tear up. He tears up the one blood work thing that Matt printed, and she's like, I have 300 of those.
So, I mean, I think that this is something that we've seen her do before, but this is like a completely other level. And Jane's good for her. Good for her.
Jane doesn't get a lot, but when she does, she makes the best of it, and she gets you.
She gets you.
She's awesome. And then, like, as Sydney's leaving, she starts joking with the model. She's like, you're a freak, and you're a freak. I'm a freak. We're all freaks. What a gotcha moment. Now, Amanda is in her apartment. She hears, like, rustling around, and she gets really scared, and she's like, who's there?
So the lights go off, and she notices the front door is ajar slightly, and she's running out, like she's kind of running around. She gets her flashlight. She's trying to investigate who might be in her apartment. And she steps out and notices a shadowy figure in a trench coat walking away past the pool. And then she sees there is a letter stuck on the side of her building.
Typed letter held up by one piece of scotch tape that says, "We're not finished yet."
So, of course, this is terrifying, but for whatever reason, Amanda opts not to call the police because if she is sure that this is Michael Mancini, she now has three different instances where he has broken his restraining order. He'd probably be thrown in jail right now had she alerted the police.
Mm-hmm.
But no, she decides to call Kimberly to let her know, Michael was just here. I know it was him. I saw him walking away in a trench coat. I'm getting really scared.
As Kimberly on the other side is taking off the clothing that Amanda is describing.
Yeah, the trench coat and the hat. So I think it was really obvious, even like to see the figure slink away, like the gait and the way that they carried themselves was Kimberly all along. Like it was very obvious that it was her. But Amanda really thinks it's Michael, and Kimberly's little setup plan is working.
She says, that must be terrifying. And we leave them, right? That cuts away.
We do, yeah. And we get over to Joe, who is preparing dinner for, or no, sorry.
Jess is making Joe dinner because he got a new, he says he got a new job.
Right, and so they're going to have a celebration dinner.
And he says, with you in my life, nothing seems impossible anymore. And Joe's like, nothing is impossible.
And so they start making out, and then Jess says, this is a very special night for me.
Ugh.
As, like, he's pinning her up against a wall, getting ready to just...
Trash sex part three?
Yeah, like, just up it, like, rough up against a wall, just, like, passionate and crazy.
And what's the special night? It's like, this is the night we beat the shit out of Jake.
Well, we'll see what he's talking about in the next scene.
So, it's shooters. Sydney is back to square one. She's down on herself, and she's just boozing at shooters at the bar.
Yeah, probably like, can I have my job back, please? I'm not a president anymore. Yeah.
The riffraff strolls into shooters. We don't know what's going to go down, and... boom, they're holding up the joint with guns.
So Richard Ramirez is like, I want wallets. I want jewelry. Everyone get down. Give me their stuff and we'll be out of here. Now, Jake, being the gallant, shining knight in shining armor that he is, stands up and is like, whoa, whoa. Okay, guys, I own this place. Take whatever you want. Everybody just cooperate. It's not a big deal. And the Richard Ramirez is like, go get the money out of the cash register. So Jake obliges. As he does, he drops a couple of bills on the ground.
On purpose.
He goes down to pick them up, but he pushes like a panic button down there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Night Stalker isn't happy that he's doing this. He's like, hey, stand up, stand up. And then he's like, whoa, okay, I'm getting up. Sorry, just drop these. And while Jake is trying to hand over the money,
pop,
Night Stalker shoots him in the gut and then just runs out without taking any valuables at all.
Then Sydney leaps up and is like, oh my God, Jake, are you okay? Jake, like, slinks down and like, he's starting to look dead inside.
Yeah, he's bleeding out and it ain't good, guys. And that's when we get the credits.
It ain't good. We got a full week of waiting to know.
Does Jake survive?
Jake, please. Please live. You can't die. You're Super Jake.
You're Super Jake.
We need you. Who's going to run Shooters? The bar that you bought that you didn't change the name.
I mean, I guess only Sydney's next in line and she doesn't even work there anymore.
Yeah. Who's going to take over?
Okay, so recap. Matt finds out about Paul's wife. Kimberly convinces Amanda to file a lawsuit against Michael. Brooke manipulates her father into hiring Allison and shipping her off to Hong Kong for a high-powered job. Paul's wife threatens to kill Matt if he goes near Paul again. Jane elaborately tricks Sydney into giving up the presidency of Jane Mancini Designs, and Jake is shot.
Oh, my God.
90s moments. What you got?
I got that crusty old payphone that Sydney is on. Do you remember how dirty payphones were?
Yeah.
So gross.
Like, I remember, like specifically, like, smelling vomit going into, like, the phone booths and stuff.
The lowest of the low.
Yeah, it's gross.
Use the payphone.
In the beginning, when Jake is kicking Jess out, and he's like, just pay your phone bill, man.
Like, yeah, that was,
like,
that
was a thing, like, when you had to share a line, and especially if he's calling up to Ellensburg. I mean, that's long distance, Dan.
Yeah. What is that, 45 cents?
It's a lot.
Paul, I don't know if this is 90s, but it's worth mentioning. Paul's three unbuttons on his dress shirt. That's a lot of unbuttons to do. It's aggressive.
Daring.
It's pretty aggressive. I don't think anyone is that that daring
that's
these days.
Suave. The pool guy having a pager, he's got to be on call to skim those pools.
Beep, beep. Beep, 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 beep. I've got writing a letter or suggesting someone write a letter that is on physical paper.
That is sad to me. I love writing letters. I love getting a handwritten letter. I love the idea of pen pals.
I don't think I've received a physical just letter in decades.
Really?
Really. And from someone who is my wife who claims to love writing letters, I haven't gotten one.
I have written you letters. How many cards have I made you?
That's not a letter.
You have a whole binder of handmade cards that I have written in my own handwriting.
Nope.
I would classify that as a letter.
Doesn't count.
I think it does.
It's not on paper.
Okay. Brooke's risque slits.
Love those slits.
I don't know if that's 90s or just like...
That's Brooke moment.
That's a...
We got to start having Brooke moments. I love that. Bring on the slits.
Ew. That sounds really gross. Having a radio at work where you would be like, yeah, turn on the tunes.
Yeah. How about not having / understanding... how to be gay and needing like a mentor. I feel like all that information is pretty handy today.
Well, I don't know. I think that especially when you're like in your adolescence and you might start becoming aware of your sexual identity.
He is well over 30.
But you know what I mean?
He's not adolescent.
I'm just saying, like, I think... And I can't really speak to this because I'm a heterosexual female, but I'm thinking that you, I've been in the position where you're kind of going into something that you don't know anything about. And
right. But like Google it. That's why it's a 90s moment because you okay. would probably begin Googling.
All right.
You know,
Joe's jean vest.
Ooh.
Right, Trash Sex 3.
Trash Sex 3. that taco stand?
I don't know if that's 90s, dude. That's
maybe
like 80s.
It is. Those prices were 90s.
Yeah.
On the side for a taco.
So, Dan, every episode has a lesson. Something we can learn and apply to in our own lives. What have you learned from kiss, bang, bang?
kiss, bang, bang, bang. Wait.
You did it. Okay. Tell us your lesson.
My lesson is not to expect, but suspect the unexpected.
Okay. I don't understand this.
Don't expect it. Suspect
it.
Yeah.
Don't expect it.
Suspect it. Suspect the unexpected.
Okay.
So, like, be inquisitive. It worked for Jane. You know? Like, what is going on here? It worked at reverse. Like,
so I'm thinking, like, Sydney, like, she should have suspected.
Yeah, Sydney should have.
Something weirder was at play.
Yeah, why is this first deal that she's getting already, like, the, like, grimiest of the grimes? And then, you know, Jake, he should suspect the unexpected, that Jess would, like, come and fuck his shit up.
I mean, I think having a lesson like that would just mean be on guard at all times and never trust anyone around you.
Ever. And Allison, she should suspect the unexpected.
Okay.
Something's up with this Hong Kong thing. Why is Brooke so quick to be like, I'll take her?
Wow, it's a great opportunity. You need to go. Yeah. Can you leave right now?
So sorry you got fired. Thanks for the job. Hey, meet with my dad on his weird boat. Have some tea. You know? What about you? What's your lesson?
Never hook up with a married person. Just don't do it. Yeah. I mean, okay.
What if you don't know?
No, I was going to say we got to give Matt a couple passes because he didn't know. Yet he found out. He was like, don't want any part of that. Yet.
Did it again.
Did it in their marital bed.
Mm.
Yikes.
Not cool.
Not cool.
All right. Now it's time for
Bitch of the Week.
I'm a boss ass bitch, 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 bitch. I'm a boss ass
Gang.
Bitch.
Last
bitch,
week
bitch.
It was Brooke versus Kimberly. I nominated Brooke. Jenny nominated Kimberly. And I'm not even going to count them because I know Brooke smashed Kimberly this week. I won. Jenny, you lose. Brooke's the bitch. Now, let's read what you all had to say.
Whoa. I got one vote on Facebook.
Yeah, you got worked.
What the heck?
Brooke sucks, man. Brooke is a total bitch.
Thanks, Donald. You're the only one that cares about me.
And I want to thank Donald, thank you for taking it on your own to post the Bitch of the Week poll, so I didn't have to, because I normally forget on Tuesdays or whatever the podcast.
Yeah, Donald,
releases.
You're awesome.
So thanks for making that poll.
Thanks for actually doing our job. We have so little that we have to do. Donald says, I hope I didn't overstep by putting this up here for you, Dan and Jenny. I just wanted to do it as a thank you for providing me and countless others in the group with entertainment each week, no matter when you put the episode out. It's worth the wait. Oh, thank you. And I know we suck. We've been saddled with a lot of stuff going on. And thank you for sticking with us, guys. So Donald goes on to say that this week he is voting with Dan's pick, Brooke, because she is literally a terrible character and she just gets worse from here. I cannot stand her in this episode for being such fake friends with Allison. It was just so terrible. I absolutely hate her and Billy together and I just don't like her character at all. So of course I voted for her.
Steven says, Brooke is always the bitch to me. LOL.
Amanda says, I haven't gotten this far in the podcast yet, but Brooke is the bitch of the series, hands down. Whoa.
Whoa.
Okay.
Zach. What's up, Zach? He says, it's Brooke. Also, you guys are going to have to start getting creative with your noms again.
Ooh.
Otherwise, I'm pretty sure Brooke is going to be hijacking Bitch of the Week for the foreseeable future. Wow.
Okay.
She really gets nasty with those
slit dresses. I guess
we're
going to have to start like getting the pool guys in on it. And remember the AIDS tester?
Oh, yeah. It's not HIV. It's AIDS. Okay. Also, can you please create some MP fan fiction? Because your predictions about K Beacon sound way funnier than what is actually
Zach,
happening.
Zach, you have to watch the parallel Melrose Place series.
Dude, that spinoff. Yeah, we've already got one in the works.
K, Meredith.
Guess what,
Keith.
Guys? Keith didn't die. Paul. Paul is actually with Sandy now.
And the other Paul is actually one of the Twin Oaks, but he just changed his name.
Right. And that weird cop is arresting so many people. It's insane. It is absolutely insane. So yeah, we're working on that.
Jamie says, I have to start by saying I had the same thought as you, Jenny, regarding plastic surgeon Paul. I thought for sure he was calling Kimberly. I totally forgot that storyline. As for bitch of the week, gotta go with Brooke. Kimberly isn't a bitch. She is just a psychotic. Brooke is a total two-faced bitch.
JoJo says, B-O-W, definitely Brooke. One, she sabotaged Allison's chance with the company by providing inside info to Amanda, thus making her look incompetent and insensitive on one blow. Two, she knows Allison wants to rekindle things with Billy, and she's just a two-faced lying bitch for sneaking out with Billy behind her back. Three, she is just simply a spiteful person with a complex, nearly difficult to understand relationship with her father. She is manipulative, and I cannot wait to see justice brought upon her. Episode should have been called Two-Faced Snake. Be careful with that sting.
Ooh. Rodney says, Brooke, this week, Allison has been terrible, but she is clearly drowning and vulnerable. Brooke is taking advantage of it, and it's really bitchy. Her versus... it's really bitchy. I don't know why I said that like that. Her versus Allison may be my favorite rivalry of the series, though. It's only going to get worse and more fun. Can't wait to see what that means.
Nikki says, Brooke, anyone who wants Billy is a bitch. The fact that those panties drop when he's around is gross. That's my favorite.
Oh, great, guys. Thank you so much for weighing in. Now, Daniel, as you are the reigning champion, please grace us all with your nomination this week.
My bitch of the week this week is Paul.
Oh, okay.
Was yours Paul?
No.
Okay. All right. Yeah. My bitch of the week is Paul. And here's why. Paul, bro, you put Matt in a really tough spot. You went ahead and had sex with him, lied to your wife about it. Then you freaking harass him at work. You parade pictures of your weird, intense wife on your desk. Then you come down, you send him mixed signals. You're hitting on him at work, but you're telling him that you have to keep it a secret because you're married. Then you lead him on even more. You bring him over to have dinner. And then, as Jenny said, you had sex with him again in your bed, in your family's bed. That is so fucked up. Handle your own shit. Work out your own stuff. Don't be bringing Matt into it. Matt's a nice gentleman who is openly gay, knows what's up, and he doesn't really need your drama all up in his life right now. He's got it figured out. So when you need it figured, when you figure it out, you come back. Don't be this bitch. And check your wife, too. He told his wife that
I was going to say that. Like, then he goes running to his wife, yeah, and he's like, this guy, Matt Fielding at work, seduced me.
He took advantage of me. What, did you fucking trip and fall on his dick? Like, come on, man. Come on. He didn't just barge into your house and make you make him a dinner. Check the dishes in the sink. Like, this was a co-op. This is so fucked up. Paul's the bitch. You're definitely an Oaks. You have all the signs. You're aggressive. You're manipulative. And quite frankly, you're scary. And you're a bitch.
Okay. My bitch this week is Jess. Ooh. Okay. Guys, we've gone over this many times before, but sleeping with your brother's ex, totally don't do that. Like, not cool. If you do decide to cross that line, have a little bit of dignity and kind of be sympathetic. Understand, hey, this is probably going to hurt my brother. Instead, he tries to act like, wait, why are you throwing me out? Why are you mad at me? Because I'm sleeping with Joe. The fact that this is news to him and that he's surprised by Jake's reaction is ridiculous to me. Like, you've got to have no sense of the world or how other people's emotions work. And then when he senses that Jake is upset, he decides to take it further and rub it in and say really gross and derogatory things, like about Joe, being like, you warmed her up for me and you can't take that Joe's gonna be digging her nails into my back. And he's like, really, things that we don't need to hear. Okay, so that's bad enough. But for some reason, like, okay, Jess, you got the girl. Like, you've got what Jake really wants, but you feel that you need to then hire someone to murder him? Why? You're out on top, man. Why do you want to literally end your brother's life? He only sheltered you when you needed a place to stay, gave you a job, trusted you, supported you, wanted you to have a happy and nice life, and you're going to repay him by having sex with the love of his life and then murdering him? That is the bitchiest thing I've ever seen. And then lastly, the real kicker for me is that the day that he hires someone to murder his brother, he goes to Joe and puts the moves on her and says, this is a very special night for me, and make sure that you are sticking it to Joe while your brother is bleeding out and dying. That's horrible.
Yeah.
Jess is the clear-cut bitch.
All right. Once the poll comes out, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, vote and let us know who you think the bitch is. So, that being said, this episode was named Kiss, Kiss, Bang, Bang.
It's Kiss, Kiss, Bang, Bang.
Those commas do not lead to that. It is Kiss, Kiss, Bang, Bang.
Okay. What are you going to name this, Dan?
I'm renaming this one Set Up and Take Downs. So Jess is taking down Jake.
Mm-hmm.
And Jane setting up Sid. Kimberly setting up Amanda. Brooke taking down Allison.
Awesome.
What about you?
A Hanson hit.
A Hanson hit.
Now, if Mbop was in this episode, that would work for me on so many levels. And you know what? Maybe it is. We don't know what original music was played.
Maybe. I'm sure it wasn't Mbop when he got shot. Said Mbop.
I need all your jewelry. Mbop. A Hanson hit.
No, don't think so. Hanson hit. I like it.
Okay, so predictions. What are we going to see in upcoming episodes?
Guys, Allison is going to hate it in Hong Kong. I know it. I know it. I think Billy is going to get wind of Brooke's shenanigans, and that's going to be enough for him to maybe like go to Hong Kong and be like, I like you again. Come back. I think nothing comes of this malpractice suit for Amanda and Michael. We might never even hear of it again. I think Joe is going to like go to Jake's bedside, and Jess is going to be like, oh, don't worry about him. Remember how passionate I am and how much
I slam you up against the wall and just like, do you
remember our electricity? And she's just going to be like, Jess, get the fuck out of here. And maybe that'll bring them together. Who knows? Maybe that'll bring him and Sydney together.
Hmm.
Since Sydney is the one at his side right now.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I think that's it.
I don't think this is the last we're going to see of Carol. I think that she is going to come for Matt hard, because I don't think Paul's going to be able to stay away from Matt. Matt is one of those guys that when you get him, you don't want to let him go.
Matt's got the magic stick.
So I think she's going to come back, maybe make good on that promise to try to kill him. I think that Jake has got to live. He lives. He's going to live. And I think that this Joe and Jake thing is going to, I'm sorry, this Joe and Jess thing is going to fizzle out sooner than later. I feel like Kimberly is setting up Amanda to take deadly action against Michael. I think she's going to kind of try to skew the facts to show Amanda that Michael is going to try to kill her. And I think she's going to make Amanda do the dirty work for her, that she's going to manipulate Amanda into basically murdering Michael.
Mm.
And I think that Allison is coming home. I think she'll be in Hong Kong for 2 episodes and then something will happen. And then she'll be back in Melrose Place in her. Then thankfully her apartment will not have yet been rented and she can just slide right back in.
Well, season ends in 2 episodes. So I think she's coming back next or the finale.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's coming back.
We got 2 more and we're done season 3.
Ah, I can't even believe it.
Holy shit. So if you're not in our closed Facebook group, you should really get in there. It's been some really fun posts. Graham with the scary Facebook picture.
Yeah, that picture. Whoa.
He
and
went,
I mean that because I love it.
He went to the Oxnard beach house.
You didn't. Why didn't you go?
The other day, he was there. He's got all these pictures up of him there on the beach, like near the house, in like this badass Melrose Place shirt. And yeah, it's so cool. So cool.
Love it.
There was an article that I shared that Heather Locklear from Rehab is like tweeting that she wants to bang Bradley Cooper's character from that new movie.
What's
A Star is Born.
Oh, I want to see that so bad.
And then I forget why we were talking about like Allison's robe, Old Faithful.
Oh yeah.
And Christian shared a link about like bathrobes in are the hottest fashion accessories on TV, and they talked about Allison's robe.
What?
That robe, yeah. And like that robe was sold in auction like a long time ago.
Dan, prop store's gotta get that up.
I know, dude. We need it. We need
what
it.
What if prop store did sell Melrose Place props and costumes?
We would be in serious debt. And I found a link for a No More Victim shirt.
Oh, I know.
I need it.
No, you don't.
Yes, I do. This okay. is my thing. I have so many t-shirts, guys.
It's bad.
I need it. So get in that group. It's always fun. And that's where we keep the conversation going. But we're on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Melrose Pod. And you can email us, melrosepod@gmail.com. Leave us a review. That would help us out a ton. And give us that 5 stars and share us with your friends. If you have somebody who's looking for a podcast they want to listen to and binge or whatever, tell them about us. Just share our post with them.
We love smut.
And we love you.